please state your name, your current position, and your field of study?
Sure. My name is Susan Bates, and I work at the National Center for Atmospheric Research in the Climate and Global Dynamics Laboratory. I'm specifically in the climate change research section, and I focus on global climate modeling and using those models to understand processes both coupled between the ocean and atmosphere that are changing things in the climate system. And so I do also look a lot at future climate change.
And what first got you interested in science as a whole, and what got you interested in your current field of study?
So I don't know that there was like any defining moment that got me interested in science. I've always been fascinated by the physical world and understanding it. And I grew up in North Carolina and grew up going to the Outer Banks quite a bit. I have family there, and we spent many family vacations there every summer. And I remember even as a young kid looking at the ocean and just thinking, where are the waves coming from? Why are they crashing on shore? I knew about this thing called the Gulf Stream that was, to me, way out in the ocean, and I couldn't reconcile how this current was moving one way, but yet I was looking at something on the shore that wasn't moving in that direction. And so I think I've always just really been curious about the physical world. And so when I went to college, I found myself in the geology department and got my bachelor's is in geology, but there was a focus on oceanography within that department back then. And again, the geology appealed to trying to figure out what's happened in the past with the Earth, and oceanography, again, my fascination with the ocean. So that sort of just steered me that way, and I spent a semester. I went to Duke University, and they have a marine lab down on the coast in North Carolina. And so I spent a semester there, and just, I mean, that was like heaven for me to be in a coastal facility with professors who were doing research, you know, kind of right there. And I took a course from Dr. Richard Barber, and he was teaching kind of, I don't remember what the course was called, but it was, would talk about air-sea interactions. We talked about El Nino, things like that, and that just really stuck with me, and I loved the course so much. And so that, I think, maybe started to steer me that direction. I did work for a couple of years before going back to get a master's and then PhD. And I wanted to work as a geologist. I had a degree in geology, and I wanted to sort of try that out, but I knew I was really drawn toward the oceanography and climate. And so I did work for a couple of years and then decided that, you know, yes, I wanted to go back and pursue the oceanography and climate. So that's how I ended up where I am, I think.
And with your experiences on the Outer Banks of growing up, was that the first time that you realized that science transformed something around you in the world?
I don't know. I think that growing up in North Carolina and being so much near the ocean, I think, you know, I was already drawn to sciences and, just the natural world. But I think that I do think growing up in North Carolina had an impact on where I ended up. Another thing that growing up, hurricanes would come by, you know, quite often, and I was fascinated by that, too. And when we had a hurricane coming our way, I could watch the Weather Channel all day. And so I think possibly you're correct that I was seeing that something that people were doing with science, especially with the hurricanes, was then getting translated to society in some way, and that these are events that are really impactful to society, and so understanding them, I think, was really important. I also think, so when I was at Duke University, I studied and also did a work study with Dr. Oren Pilkey, who at the time was leading the program for the study of developed shorelines. And so I became a work study with him. My first semester, I took an intro oceanography course, and he was one of the professors. And he did a lot of Barrier Island, you know, studying of Barrier Islands. And so I talked to him one day after class and ended up with a work study in his office and worked there all 4 years. And he, one of his focuses is to kind of educate the public about, he calls it living with the Barrier Island, not on the Barrier Island. And he wrote books about living on the shore, or living with the shore of North Carolina, South Carolina, like all your East Coast states, and in Puerto Rico. And I helped do some of the hazard mapping on the coasts with him as a student, and helped draft some of the maps that actually went into his books. And I think that maybe that also was realizing that science is transforming something, because there wasn't... One important thing about what he was doing is there was no politics involved in what he was doing. Nothing else was coming into it except the science, and he was doing it in order to help the public, and that was science serving society, and that really appealed to me. And I think also struck me that you're, again, science is something that can be used to help society in some way, and that learning more about it and understanding it could be helpful. So that, I think, too, was sort of led me to where I am.
That sounds like a really great work study opportunity.
It was really amazing, and he's an amazing person, and, you know, just so energetic, and we would go for field trips out on the Barrier Islands, and, you know, it was all you could do as a college student to keep up with this professor as he's, like, trudging across the, you know, dunes and things like that. So it was a ton of fun. And I interacted with the graduate students, which was, I think, pretty unique and eye-opening.
When I interned at USGS years ago, I actually had done a podcast on their coastal change hazards program that went out and took LIDAR surveys before and after hurricanes, and it really left an impression on me. And,
oh, yeah.
It was very interesting work, so... I still sporadically check up on what they're doing.
Yeah. I look back on those days, because also when I spent this semester at the Marine Lab, I did a field study and with one of the professors there. And so I was going out in a little skiff, you know, quite often just with one other student. And we were using equipment and mapping the sediment in an estuary. And, you know, it's just... You're actually out there and doing science. And now, you know, I'm an oceanographer who lives in Colorado, and that's kind of funny to some people. But because I do modeling, you know, I'm behind a computer all day, and I really do miss, you know, being in the field and being an oceanographer who's actually around the ocean. and I do look back at those days, and it really was a lot of fun, and really interactive. Not to say there's not a lot that I don't love about my current position, but I think that did. It's just a really great time that I look back on fondly.
Is that the highlight of your career, or is there a moment in your career that really was either particularly enjoyable and fun, or surprising and exciting, something that left an impact?
Gosh, that definitely left an impact. It's true. I think I've had a couple, and I'm hoping that there are more to come. So, you know, I'm at NCAR, but I think I've had a lot of opportunities even as a graduate student. So I, you know, going back to this kind of benefiting society, I've been involved in some communication and outreach programs. And when I was a grad student, I was accepted into, gosh, I don't even remember what the name of it was, but it was through the British Council in the United States, and we went over to Switzerland, and there were 5 graduate students chosen from the United States. And we went over there and got training on communication, and they pulled people, and so there were also people from Europe, and there were some people from Bangladesh. I think that was mainly it, and there were maybe 30 of us or something, and we were all from different even professions. I mean, they had engineers there, they had people who studied rivers, I mean, just kind of across the board. And so we got training in being able to communicate even among other scientists. And then at the end of the week, we actually had kind of a symposium or an outreach event where they had invited business people and local politicians. And it was about, the whole thing was about climate change. I think it was something like cities and climate change or something like that. And it was just really interesting to find other people who were interested in the same thing as you, but from a different point of view, and to be part of that than communicating it at the end of the week. So, I mean, certain things like that have kind of, to me, not really been turning points, but just been sort of validation, I guess, that, you know, I love what I do. And so, yeah, I'm not answering that question very well.
It's clear to me that you have a real passion for making science relevant and useful to the public and sharing it with them, and that's such an important thing, I think.
Right. And, you know, I'll say to you, something else that came to mind when you asked that question was, you know, now that I'm in NCAR, that one of the things that I just love about the lab that I'm in is how collaborative it is. And, you know, we're all, the climate model that we work on, we're all contributing to it in some way, and it's like we're this, you know, our lab is this big team of people who, that's kind of our purpose. And it's so much fun to me to work with other people and to work collaboratively like that, and to be a part of a team. So I mean, that's not, again, a moment, but it is something that stands out as significant.
Now, on the flip side, are there any challenges to your work other than being an oceanographer in a landlocked state?
Yeah.
And how have you overcome them?
You know, I've been thinking about some of these questions, and I think one of the challenges for me is a personal one. You know, what I do is pretty specialized, so you can't just, like a lot of professions, maybe decide you want to live in a particular city and then start looking for jobs there. You get lucky, I think, if you find a job in the city where you want to be. And my family, as I said, I'm from North Carolina, and my family, even extended family, most of them are in North Carolina. And my husband, too, we met in North Carolina. And so now we live in Colorado, and it's a challenge, and it's a challenge to, you know, still feel connected and be able to, you know, get home. And I grew up very family oriented, and like I said, I had family on the Outer Banks, and we would go there every year for Thanksgiving, and it was like, you know, 50 people, you know, that got together from the family, were second cousins, third cousins, you know, that kind of thing. And so it's kind of, I think that's been one challenge for me. I think that professionally a challenge that I've had is overcoming the fear and embarrassment, I think, of not knowing something. And this, you know, I know a lot of scientists suffer from the imposter syndrome, and I know that's probably a piece of it. But I also think, you know, when I was in grade school and high school, things that were math related or science related really came pretty easily to me. And, you know, it was something I loved, and it just clicked. And I faced, at least in those subjects, I faced some challenges in college. But I think it was really when I got to graduate school that, I mean, there's just, the farther you go, the more you realize you don't know. So I think it was a challenge for me to, you know, overcome this going to my professor and saying, I don't get this. You know, or asking questions in class. And I think that I still am a very shy person, although I'm not nearly as shy as I used to be. But even my master's program, you know, I was in my mid-20s, and I was still, I think, hadn't overcome this. So it was really my PhD program. It was a smaller program. And so we had much more interaction with our professors. And so I think I probably still struggle with that, you know, saying, I'm not sure I get what you're saying, especially in a bigger audience. But I think that was probably something that thankfully in my PhD program, that crowd really helped to foster the, you know, not everybody knows everything, and you know, it's okay to ask questions, and that's actually really good if you ask questions.
It's difficult to admit that you don't know something, and especially if you deal with imposter syndrome. So to have that sort of atmosphere and community in your PhD program sounds like it was really great.
Yeah, I agree.
Where do you see yourself in the future of science?
So I think I'm around a lot of people, I think, who I would consider them to be superstars in the field, and not because they intended to be, they just are. A lot of my mentors, a lot of the people that I work with at NCAR, they're just really great scientists. And, you know, I don't know, of course it would be great to be, you know, recognized very publicly and so connected the way a lot of them are. But I think that, you know, I don't know if that's necessarily what I'm after. I really want to have fun with what I'm doing. I want to do good science, which to me, doing good science and with great people makes it fun. And I think that in my own way, I want to make a difference. And whether that difference is a scientific understanding, you know, and results in some great publication or something, that's fine, or whether that difference is somehow to society, and whether that's on a really small scale, any of that is fine, or even whether the difference is, you know, mentoring or whatever it is, I you know, just want to sort of play a role in the bigger picture.
That's really beautiful. Really important. I'm really struck by how much you really do care about working with other people. It's clear that it's something that you're very, very passionate about, and that's what drives your science.
Yeah, you know, and I think that it's taken me, I sort of feel like I'm right now on the edge of moving more in that direction. And I actually, this past year, was chosen to be one of HEU's Voices for Science. And it's been a really great program, and I think that that support, in fact, HEU starting that program was what made me sort of jump. I'd done some outreach things, but I was being drawn toward the policy side of things and kind of wanting to get involved, but kind of being scared to make that leap by myself. And having HEU have that program and knowing that I was going to have HEU's support and other people in this program with me is what made me apply, and I'm so thankful that they chose me to be a part of this program. I think it's been 9 months now that we've been in it, and so I've, you know, just recently started reaching out to political, like congressional offices and things. I've done one visit since I've been here in D.C. for the meeting, and so I kind of feel like I'm now realizing a lot of what I've wanted to do. You know, I've been very in the science world and in the, you know, with our model at NCAR and kind of doing that kind of thing. And I sort of feel like I'm now being, you know, reaching out in ways that I had hoped. And as you've picked up on, I am quite passionate, and I hope that I can keep moving in this direction.
Do you have any plans in the future for how you would like to move forward with that?
You know, I do have some different things that I'm scheduling. In terms of, like, big picture, I feel like, you know, it took kind of a while after the training. So we were, those of us who were in Voices of Science, were brought to D.C. in April or May, I can't remember, for, like, a 2-day training. And then we committed to doing there were two tracks, and communications and a policy track, and so I'm on the policy track. But we committed to doing one policy act per month for a year. You know, then you get back to your institution, and it's kind of, you're sort of trying to figure out what the different things you're going to do, and I felt like it kind of took a while to ramp up. I did engage with quite a few people at NCAR, and we now have a great, or within my lab, and we have a great group of people that are all interested in doing this type of work, so we have a great resource within my lab, but so I think, you know, really I was using this program, and I think it's been great as a jumping off point for me. So I want to continue, you know, the reason I got into it was I wanted to start communicating on the policy side of things. And so I've started building a relationship with the senator's offices in Colorado, and have, like I said, meetings with their offices this week. And so I want to continue doing that and just keep that conversation open.
One policy action a month, that's a really good goal.
And it's actually hard. It takes a lot of time. I knew that it was going to be a big commitment, and, you know, they're keeping us on track because we have a phone call every month where they kind of grouped us geographically, and then we have a contact at AGU, and we have a phone call every month. And it's amazing how fast that month goes by, and I get the email that says, let's set up our next phone call, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what did I do over the past month? You know, I have to, like, think about, or I know that phone call's coming up, and so I think, okay, what did I say I was going to do this month? And again, for me, it's been great because it's been kind of somewhat of peer pressure from my cohorts and that kind of thing, but that's what I felt like I needed, so hopefully I have now the basis. And again, I'm going to keep the relationships with the people that I've met and talked with in the Voices for Science program, and hopefully we'll, you know, we're all talking about how ways, even after our year is up, that we're going to stay connected and kind of help to motivate each other.
Yeah, it's nice to have sort of accountability buddies, but also people with similar passions and interests to help keep fueling that passion going forward. And it's so important, especially with climate science, to engage in policy. So.
Right. And I think it's not just about what you mentioned, but it's also that when other people that you know are doing these other things too, it's sort of, not that it's really putting, I mean, in some ways you're like, oh, they're all doing all these great things, I need to up my game, but it's also just that you want to do it because you're hearing about the different things other people are doing, and then you're getting ideas from them, and you're thinking, oh, that would be a good thing to do, or, you know, that kind of thing. So I think this interaction, I want to keep it because I'm also drawing motivation and excitement from hearing about the different events that, you know, the other people in my group are doing.
For me, going to conferences or fellowships has had that same impact where I see what other people are excited about and talking about and what they're doing, and it reignites my fire a little bit.
Right. Yeah.
Which is really nice.
I think that I agree with you. That happens at these meetings too. That science-wise, I realize I'm focusing a lot on the communication side here, but science-wise, I go to talks or things like that, and the same thing happens. You're sitting there and you're thinking, oh, I wonder if I looked at this, you know, somebody's presenting something, and it sparks ideas in you about what you can do in your own research, and maybe you talk to them after the, you know, session is over or something, and yeah, that's also very motivating toward getting back to your science.
And is there anything else you would like to share for today?
So I didn't really have an agenda coming in, so trying to think of if I've, you know, forgotten something important I should say about my work, but no. Thank you very much for inviting me to do this interview.
Thank you.